As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sambit, alongside Craig Battle, senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, and Gary Mello, managing editor, Sportsnet Digital and Magazine. Guys, appreciate your getting up this morning and hanging on a Saturday morning. And we're going to talk Toronto Blue Jays. That's a thing that's going to happen with... Well, a lot. We're going to do that a lot, especially in the first hour. We're going to look at some stories around Major League Baseball in the second hour of the show as we're with you until noon here in Toronto, anyway. And we'll touch on some other things as well, including the English Premier League starting today and the Rogers Cup and a little bit of Raptors a little later on the show. But all this first hour, we're talking Toronto Blue Jays. Don't you get the feeling, though, that we can't possibly talk too much Toronto Blue Jays?
I thought actually we were going to rename this show Blue Jays Live instead of Sports and Magazine Live, because that seems to be what everyone's talking about around the city these days.
All right, Gary, that's a good idea. I mean, all right, Sportsnet Magazine Live, the Blue Jays edition.
Okay.
How's that sound?
It sounds
Craig,
good.
That's good with you?
Yeah, that's good with me.
All right, at least
Let's
for this first hour, it's the Blue Jays edition. My goodness, I can't remember a hotter team in recent memory here in Toronto. I mean, with this much on the line, I can't remember... when the Blue Jays were terrible for a while there, and they won 11 in a row, mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of like, yeah, but the team isn't that good. The feeling I get with this Blue Jays team is even if they're down, it doesn't matter with this offense. And you know, the bullpen's going to keep them in. Starting pitching is putting them in good position to win ball games anyway. I just get the feeling, like, if you told me that the Toronto Blue Jays were going to go into Yankee Stadium this weekend and sweep them, wouldn't bat an eye. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Which is a shocker long-term for this franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've been watching, like you said, in the last 10 years, they've had runs. They've had hot Mays, hot Junes, all that sort of thing. But a hot start to August, a hot, you know, immediate period following the All-Star break, that does not happen to this franchise all that often.
And, I mean, going into New York this weekend is a huge deal, because that's a place where the Blue Jays haven't traditionally played well the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to put a stretch of wins together against the Phillies, Royals, and Twins, but going into New York, where the Jays have only won like 5 games in their last, you know, 26 trips there, this is a pretty big series for them this weekend, and they got off to a great start last night.
They did, with R.A. Dickey on the mound, who was great. I mean,
yep.
7 innings, really the only blemish was a home run that was disputed anyway, but, you know, it was still a home run. It was a home run that was really the only blemish on 6 hits in 7 innings. And I don't quite think that his record is indicative of how good he's been this year. It certainly should be a lot better. You wish that he would have had some of the run support, like all the runs that maybe they were scoring, maybe some of the runs they were scoring for Drew Hutchinson. Maybe they could save a few for R.A. Dickey to make his record a little bit better. But this guy, I mean, this is what the Blue Jays were hoping to acquire in R.A. Dickey when he originally made the deal with the Mets.
And the key with him is just consistency. Like, you know, in the last couple of years, he seems to have turned it on more in the second half, and we're seeing that again this season. I mean, in his last 6-7 starts, I think he's like 4-0 with an ERA right around 1. And as long as you get, you know, those 200-plus innings from R.A. Dickey, that's all you need. You know, this offense has shown, maybe not so much for Dickey in the past, but now lately, that they can offer the run support. So if they continue to get those performances from him down the stretch, then they'll be okay.
Yeah, he's feeling it. He certainly is. And Craig, would you look at him, and it depends on what the Blue Jays are going to do with David Price. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to look too far ahead, because I really want to enjoy what this season is right now. But that would be somebody I'd bring back. I mean, R.A. Dickey for $12 million, I mean, I'd bring him back.
At this point, I think, yeah, like, I definitely agree with you. I just love that he eats innings. You know, on a team that has had its bullpen issues so far this year, He's a guy that can just sort of get into the seventh for you. He can, you know, he can go eight, you know, like there's a potential complete game in him every once in a while. And you're just not going to need to rely on the bullpen. You can rest those guys. You can just sort of push back and maybe get Osuna to come in for the ninth, you know. That's incredibly valuable. And I don't think that's going away, you know, like in most 40-plus-year-old pitchers, you're worried that, you know, obviously that stuff's going to go away, or he's going to start being inconsistent, he's going to lose his fastball. There's no worry about that with a knuckleballer.
No, and same thing with Dickey. I mean, he's obviously had, you know, the surgery where he can pitch probably until he's 50. Like, that's another bonus to having him here.
Yep.
And then you have to consider the Mark Burley situation. You know, he's the last year of his contract, and he's been very vague about what a future holds with him. Maybe the Blue Jays are able to bring him back. I don't know. Maybe he's got ideas of retiring. Only Mark Burley knows that at this point. But if he's not back with this rotation next year, then you're losing a lot of innings as well, because there's a guy who consistently is giving you 200 innings every year too. So having R.A. Dickey, a guy who, again, can eat up innings, is very important for this rotation.
And I feel like it's important that you sort of cast R.A. Dickey in the proper light. Like when he came over here and he was a recent Cy Young winner and stuff like that, I think people expected him to be a top of the rotation ace, you know, like mowing guys down and stuff like that. And he's not necessarily that guy. He's not David Price. We've got David Price now for 2 months, you know, fingers crossed, maybe more, but that's, you know, another question. R.A. Dickey is a guy who can be your third or fourth starter, capably, you know, giving you those 7-8 innings on a regular basis. And that is an incredibly valuable thing. And $12 million for that in this market is not a lot of money.
And let's face it, the Blue Jays bought high when they traded for R.A. Dickey. As you mentioned, he was fresh off that Cy Young. So I think the expectations maybe when he arrived in Toronto were a little bit unfair.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you knew that. Like, you knew that at the time with R.A. Dickey. Like, I didn't expect him to be the Cy Young winner.
No,
but I expected him to be a guy that would you know, be at the top of the rotation, that would be that guy. But the Blue Jays knew that at the time. And Mike Milner talked about it on the postgame show last night. Like, enough with the, you know, the look back on that Mets deal and seeing what Syndergaard is doing right now with the New York Mets and saying, oh, it's too bad we didn't have that guy anymore. We have R.A. Dickey. According to Wilner last night, R.A. Dickey has performed better this year than Syndergaard has. Like, it's, you know, he's had a better year than Syndergaard has. So do away with all the, you know, the look back on Syndergaard and what he's, maybe in a couple of years we'll do that.
Yeah.
But it's just the organizations at two different times. They just, you know, you look at the Mets at that time, and you know, they were an organization that was rebuilding, and the Blue Jays were not. They were looking at it, you know, they were looking at that window of going for it, and they were building that with R.A. Dickey. So, you know, enough of the looking back, and certainly at this time right now with how great things are going for the Toronto Blue Jays. Now 3.5 back of the New York Yankees after a 2-1 win in New York last night. They've won 6 straight, 8 of their last 9, 9-0 with Troy Tulowitzki in the lineup. 9-0. So based on that, if Troy Tulowitzki is playing, the Blue Jays are going to win, right?
Of course.
Yep. Done. It's a done deal. Why even bother playing the games? No. Just pencil them into the lineup, save yourself 3 hours, and just go home and just have a beverage or something, because you know the Blue Jays are going
to
win.
Yeah, if the start is all he needs to do, you could potentially even rest him. You just start him for the first inning, give him a bat, and then just sit him down. If that's all he needs, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly. Just have him lead off, bat once. And then he can sit down the rest of the time because he's played. Yeah. So
all he has to do is start. That's the way the stat works.
Now, that's very telling of this Blue Jays offense right now, though. When you have true Tulowitzki leading off, like, that tells you how frightening that top half of the order is for opposing teams.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mess with that, right? That top four of the order. Like, if Ben Revere is going and he's starting to go, you know, Ben Revere's going, or, you know, let's say down the road, Devin Travis is coming back. I don't mess with that top four in the lineup. I like that top four.
Yeah, Travis is a good leadoff hitter, though. And, you know, as much as I love Justin Smoke, I'm not sure I'm entirely comfortable with him in that 5 spot. So I don't know. Maybe when Devin Travis is back in the lineup, you put him in that leadoff spot, and then you move Tulowitzki to the 5 hole. I don't think that's a terrible thing.
I think it's amazing having Donaldson as your 2 hitter.
For sure.
I mean, how many teams can have a borderline MVP candidate coming up second after Troy Tulowitzki? That's pretty incredible. You're not pitching around him to get to Jose Bautista.
Well, and at least for right now, you're not doing anything different. Like, whatever you're doing, just keep doing
keep
it.
Going.
Because
yeah, no,
they're winning ball games, and you don't do anything. But, you know, we're thinking maybe down the road or something. But I wouldn't mess with it. Look, this team could win the division. And we've been talking about this throughout the week. Looking ahead to all the games they're going to have with the Yankees. They played one last night, and they've got 12 more against the Yankees this year. They could win the division. I was talking to Frank Catalanato, former Blue Jay, former MLB-er, who lives in New York. He's a New York guy. And so I was talking to him, and he said he believes the Blue Jays are going to win the division. He thinks that's going to happen. And that's not a popular opinion out in New York. Clearly, the majority feels that the Yankees are going to win the division. They've gotten used to that idea this year,
sure,
given the lead they once had. But the Blue Jays have gained 4.5 games on the Yankees over the last 9 games. There's nothing to say that with all the real estate left in the baseball season and all the games they have left against the New York Yankees this year that they could win the division.
Well, it's amazing how much that conversation has changed in the last, you know, 7 to 10 days. I mean, there was a while there, you know, I guess there were seven and a half back of the Yankees for the division lead. And everyone kind of, well, that wild card, you know, they're only a handful of games behind that wild card. Make a couple of moves, go on a hot run, and it's amazing how much that, you know, those goals change.
Yeah, very, very different nowadays with Gary Mello and Craig Battle on the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sambit. Nobody tell Roberto Osuna that what he's doing is amazing because he's just a kid. He's, what, 20? Youngest pitcher to ever record a save in extra innings. That happened last night. Only threw six pitches. Saved the game in the bottom of the 10th in front of his family as well. This kid just has ice in his veins. He's aware of what he's doing on this big stage and is just, you know, cool as a cucumber, or he does not know. You know, based on his youth, Craig, he just does not know what he's doing, which is perfectly fine by me.
Yeah, yeah, no, whatever they've got, you know, if they've got the blinders on them, you know, don't read the papers, don't Google your name because, yeah, you might get a big head. Oh, my God. He's been absolutely incredible for this team. You know, for all that time we talked about the bullpen being a problem, that was never factoring in Roberto Osuna because he's been amazing. Even last night while listening to the interview after the game, when he was just talking about how LaTroy Hawkins has been big for him now that he's got Hawkins in the thing, and just, you know, incredibly humble and incredibly grateful that he's got these guys to talk to and that they're willing to work with him. I think that, yeah, he's the perfect player for this team right now.
And I mean, LaTroy Hawkins, you mentioned that he's great influence on that young bullpen because you have a couple of young arms in that bullpen, and, you know, with Sanchez and Osuna.
Sure.
And coming into the season, we talked ad nauseum about how important it was with the Blue Jays relying on some of those young arms. So getting a performance like that in New York, extra innings, that's a huge deal. That's a sign of positive things to come with that kid for sure.
It's a good observation, Craig, to bring up, you know, Osuna mentioning LaTroy Hawkins and the influence the veteran has had on the young man. And that's obviously in part why he was brought in. And, you know, at the time when Anthopoulos was holding a press conference and talking about the Tulowitzki deal and talking about the acquisitions he was making or he had made, he talked about LaTroy Hawkins a lot. And it kind of felt at the time like, all right, well, that was a guy that was part of this deal, you know, part of this massive deal that he's not the headline of. But he has been a tremendous influence. And beyond LaTroy Hawkins, Brett Cecil, both of them pitched last night, each pitched a scoreless inning. Cecil's 15 consecutive scoreless innings. So he's, you know, you look at those two, you look at Osuna, everybody in that bullpen. Now, Liam Hendricks as well, Bo Schultz. This is a really deep bullpen. While we were talking about how this was such a big problem for the Toronto Blue Jays before, it's not right now. And then you look at what's going on with the Washington Nationals. They're trying to overcome the New York Mets in the National League East. And we're like close to mid-August here, and we're talking about that.
Yep.
And they went out and picked up Jonathan Papelbon. So, I mean, we're waking up on a morning like today and saying, kind of glad the Blue Jays didn't go out and get a closer. Kind of glad they didn't go out and pay the price for a Jonathan Papelbon.
No, their bullpen's been pretty good. And, you know, I don't want to say it too soon, but you know, there's all this talk about a Marcus Stroman possibly coming back in September and adding.
Oh, you said it too soon.
Save that for next week's show. Yeah. No, but you're right. That bullpen has been great and it's made a big difference. And it helps when, you know, you get a pitcher like Drew Hutchinson is going out there and struggling, being able to rely on that bullpen, like, you know, earlier this week, that was a huge plus for the Jays and got him out of, you know, got him a victory that night against the Twins.
Yeah. And one guy we haven't mentioned yet is Mark Lowe, too, right? And that was a big thing. And obviously, his first outing with the Jays, he gives up 3 runs, but he'd only given up 4 in the entire season before that. And he's had 1.1 innings since, scoreless ball. So they've got an embarrassment of riches all of a sudden. It just feels kind of strange that we were talking about that facet of the team being so, in dire straits so recently.
And you talk about LaTroy Hawkins and his, you know, his effect on the younger pitchers. It doesn't hurt that you can take him out there and he can still light up the radar gun for 96. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty impressive for a bullpen guy who's 42 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the Jays made the deal, I think Primetime Sports, they had former Colorado Rockies GM Dan O'Dowd on, and he spoke very highly of LaTroy. He's like, I don't think, you know, people in Toronto realize what the team is getting. Like, the focus was on Tulo and what he would bring to the team in his defense and his bat. But LaTroy Hawkins, do not overlook LaTroy Hawkins because he is a great clubhouse guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh Donaldson, I don't know how many more compliments we could throw at this guy, but he hits his career-high 30th home run of the year last night. I mean,
goodness, you look back at that deal. Like, we talk about the Tulowitzki deal and the Price deal. It's almost as if we're burying the Donaldson deal now because it feels like forever ago that that had actually happened. But here he is, and Craig, you mentioned him in batting second and what a coup it is to have this kind of a lineup with a guy like Josh Donaldson hitting second. But my goodness, I don't think any of us could have predicted that we'd get this kind of production out of Josh Donaldson.
No, in basketball parlance, the hero ball is sort of like a pejorative, right? You don't want to be playing hero ball. You don't want to be ball hogging. But last night when he stepped up to make that play to get out the runner at first in the top of, sorry, the bottom of the ninth, it was just an incredible defensive play. He had a home run early. I feel like what we're watching right now from Josh Donaldson is hero ball of like the finest order. Like, he's got the swagger, he's got confidence. I think that's, you know, it trickles down to the rest of the team. You can't be playing better baseball than Josh Donaldson is right now. His splits over the last little bit are incredible. I feel like that can't be overlooked when you look at sort of Alex Anthopoulos' record. You know, like, people were like, touch and go on him. You know, has he done a good enough job leading into the trade deadline? But that deal is such a coup for so many reasons.
And let's face it, if not for that young outfielder playing on the West Coast, Josh Donaldson would probably be the MVP candidate right now, like the top candidate in the American League. Like, he's been that good. And if the Blue Jays continue on this run and he keeps it up, I mean, he's at 30 home runs and, you know, over 60, like, fantastic season. And, you know, when they trade away Brett Laurie, my biggest fear was the defense, because I hadn't seen much enough of John Donaldson to know what type of defense he brought, but he's been spectacular playing that left.
He's been good. I mean, there's been a couple of errant throws that Justin Smoak has bailed him out of.
Yep.
Last couple of days, but nevertheless, that affords us the opportunity to talk about an upgraded defense with Justin Smoak out there in first base, and we could look at, you know, several different positions with Pilar out in center field. I mean, what an amazing catch he had this week. Not his best of the year.
No. Nope.
Not his best of the year. That Spider-Man catch in left field.
But that's how telling how good he's been this season.
Yeah, yeah. But having him out in center field, the acquisition of Ben Revere out left field, an upgraded short with Troy Tulowitzki, joining Josh Donaldson over at third base. Ryan Goins gets to play every day now at second base. We're talking defense here. Mind you, his offense has been okay.
No, he's been good.
And at first base, you got Justin Smoak. This is one of the better defensive teams we've seen from the Toronto Blue Jays that I can remember.
In a long time. And I'm sure that plays on the minds when batters, when they step into that box, is, you know, with Jose Reyes here, we kind of saw what that happened. You know, defensively, there was a bit porous there on that left side of the field. If, you know, Josh Donaldson wasn't able to get to a ball, you were kind of always kind of clenching, you know, the armrest on your seat a little bit when watching Jose Reyes. But that's not the case with Tulo.
No. And I think the incredible amount of bats that this team has allows you to do that. So you lose Devin Travis for a little while. You're not worried about replacing his bat as much because you've got, you know, that five masher to start, right? So you can have Ryan Goins come in, or you can have Minori Kawasaki come in. And these guys are great defensive players, make excellent plays. And then so you sort of beef up that part of your team while you're waiting for another part of your team to come back. And I think that's an incredible depth. And I don't remember a time when this team had that sort of depth.
Yeah, 15 ground ball outs yesterday, 3 double plays returned, and you mentioned Kawasaki, Craig, hasn't played a lot.
So nope.
For a guy like that to not play a lot and then to come in and turn a double play was great to see. And you'd almost expect it out of Kawasaki these days, but it's, you know, I got to give a shout out to him because it's quite a difficult thing to do, to be on the bench for that long and then to come in and to play at a high level that he has, which is good. I'm talking on the field and entering that double play. And you look at last night, everything's going with this Blue Jays team. I mean, you're talking about starting pitching, you're talking about the bullpen. And the offense only had, you know, a couple of runs, but you know, Jose Bautista comes in and hits a game-winning home run. And you talk about defense as well. I mean, as much as we could look at one player or one category with this Blue Jays club, it's everybody pulling on the same chain. Every category you could look at with the Toronto Blue Jays right now, everybody's playing well. Every facet of this baseball team is working out.
No doubt. I mean, and everything is coming together at the right time, which I think is key. You know, you look at a year ago and, you know, August 1st, and they had more wins last season than they did this season. The difference was they went on that big tear like late May, early June, and then they kind of slumped through July and really did, sorry, late July and early August. The difference is they were on the decline last year at this point, whereas this year they're starting to pick it up just at the right time.
Just saw this lineup card. I'll tell you who's in the lineup today for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Sounds great.
Tulowitzki's leading things off, playing short. Josh Donaldson batting second, playing third. Bautista in right, batting third. Encarnacion cleaning up and DHing. Justin Smoak at first base and batting fifth. Russell Martin is catching and batting sixth. Goins at second base, batting seventh. Pilar in center, batting eighth. And Ben Revere batting ninth.
and playing left field. So the typical lineup that you would have expected today at Yankee Stadium.
Who's pitching?
Some guy named Price. I'm going to look him up and see who this David, a person named David Price.
I thought it was Donald.
Is going to be pitching today for the Toronto Blue Jays. All right, let's talk about him since you wanted to note that he's pitching today. Last two starts versus the Yankees. I'm going to get this out of the way. Not to burst a bubble here. And it's not to say he's going to have a bad start today, all right?
No.
So I don't want anybody going, see, I told you. David Price threw a no-hitter. He was fantastic. I'm just saying, 9 straight hits once. That happened in last start. 8 runs in 2 1/3 innings in the other. So his last two starts, not very good for David Price versus the Yankees. Not sweating it. There's a story on that on Sportsnet.ca about that. Back on it, for the more than that, back on August 27th, 2014, allowed 8 runs on 12 hits and a walk in 2-plus innings. Overall, here's what David Price has done against New York Yankees. 10-7, a 4.41 ERA in 27 career games. All of those as a starter, all but one of those as starters. So he's going to be, and look, he's going to be facing them again next Friday, maybe 2 more times later on in the year. Is this worrisome to you guys? You know, that David Price of late has not been very good against the Yankees?
No, not to me. I mean, not to overload the talk with stats here, but I'm just looking at his stats from playing in Yankee Stadium, the new Yankee Stadium. He's got 13 starts, and he's got a 3.52 ERA, 6-2, 2 win-loss, 1.3 whip. I think in that building, he's been historically good. So I'm not that worried about that. And also, I feel like anybody can have a bad game against any team at any time. It just happens, right? So he gives up 8 runs in that one game, and that was way back in April. So I'm not looking at that as a more recent thing or a bigger trend than his other games here.
Well, let's keep in mind, he didn't have that Blue Jays defense and offense behind him those last two games, so that'll certainly help a little bit. But you're right. I mean, the Blue Jays need him to kind of step up today and kind of forget those last two starts against the Yankees. As we mentioned, the Blue Jays have been traditionally bad in New York. He's playing today, could possibly play against the Yankees again on Friday, could have another 2 starts with the season with 12 games remaining. So they kind of need him to kind of get it together and have, you know, a strong outing against this Yankees lineup.
And one thing I like about David Price that I was reminded of on Monday was his resiliency is you know, right up there with that's a sort of ace level. You know, you know traditionally in a Jays pitcher, or at least in the last few years, you kind of feel like they get in trouble and then you just kind of, like you said, arm wrestling the arms of your chair there. But when he got in trouble, and I think it was the 4th inning, the bases loaded, none out, you know, I was like, oh, geez, you know, we're in trouble now. Price is going to get bounced out of his first start for the Jays too early. And he closed it down, and he went 8, right? So I feel like the hold that a Yankee Stadium has over, like, a regular pitcher probably won't affect David Price in the same way. So if he does get in trouble in the early innings, I'm not worried about him. I'm letting him stay in there, and I'm letting him show me what kind of a pitcher he is.
You know, I thought with this win last night, and maybe the Blue Jays feel this way, with a win last night, knowing David Price was pitching today, it's like, all right, good. It's not that it's a guaranteed win by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not suggesting that. But this team must be feeling awfully good. I mean, they're feeling awfully good about themselves. This is a confident bunch. But they must be feeling pretty good about themselves having won the game last night. They go in this afternoon with David Price on the mound. And they could conceivably walk away winning 2 out of 3. Like, they could feel that comfort of, okay, we won the first game. Like, a bit of the pressure is off, and we've got David Price going today. The Blue Jays must be feeling that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In a good way.
In a great way. I feel like, you know, we've talked a lot about the sort of run support that the Drew Hutchison has had this year. And, you know, he's averaging sort of 7 runs of run support and how that sort of inflates his overall record. He's 10-2. But, you know, I think from David Price's standpoint as well, he knows that he's not going to, if he makes a single mistake, he's not playing with a team that doesn't have the offense to help him out. So I think it works both ways. Both the team knows that let's get some runs because David Price isn't going to give up too many, you know, like let's get some runs on that board and then, you know, hold them kind of thing. But from David Price's point of view, you know, he knows that this team has been averaging 6 runs a game over the last 10, and they're 9-1. So that, you know, I think both of those sides have a level of confidence in the other. And that's a fantastic position to be in.
No, having a guy like Price on the mound certainly puts a little more pep in your step when you're the offense and you're walking up to the plate. And just that air of confidence when you're going into a game, I think, helps a lot, especially in Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Burley was talking about that this week. He was saying, you know, feeling that this team felt like the 05 White Sox that he won a World Series with, that even if they're down a couple of runs, you know, they feel like, all right, just got to score a couple runs. Like, we'll be okay. Like, with this offense,
you've got that confidence. And Burley was talking about that this week. The Blue Jays starting to get some attention down south. That matter to you at all? Like that coverage in the United States, outlets out of the United States are going, hey, look at that Blue Jay team over there. Like, I watch a lot of the MLB Network. Like, I have to admit, as a Torontonian, my chest kind of sticks out a little bit seeing them talk about us a little. I mean, but, you know, if they didn't, it didn't bother me. Like, I'm not one of those that's like, oh, they're talking about us in the United States of America. It really doesn't.
No.
But I have to admit, it kind of feels good to be talking about a winning team, to see that this team is getting recognized down south.
Well, I like it because it's a byproduct of success, right? I mean, people are either talking about you when you're really good or really bad. So in this case, I think it's a great thing that, you know, they're kind of getting that media exposure and, you know, people are talking about it, and whether it's, you know, thinking whether or not the Jays can catch the Yankees and stuff, the fact are they're part of the conversation now. And it's not just in Toronto. Like, you can feel the buzz in the city, but they're a big story right across Major League Baseball. I mean, there were GMs that went on the record, you know, former GMs this week and said in this last week, said that Alex Anthopoulos had one of the best trade deadlines in the history of, you know, Major League Baseball. Like, that's a pretty spectacular thing. So the fact that people are sitting up and taking notice, I think, is fantastic. But again, just because it's a byproduct of how well they've been playing.
Yeah, and I think over the years, over the 22 years of playoffless baseball, that, you know, the fan base has maybe dwindled a little bit at times. And, you know, you've had sort of, I remember a couple of years back, the Chicago White Sox came up for a trip and the columnist came away thinking, like, we need to subtract this franchise from the league because the building's dead and, you know, the fans don't care and baseball's never going to survive in Toronto and that sort of stuff. And I feel like you have a little bit of success and that talk just immediately goes away because it's stupid. It's stupid talk, you know, that sort of, this team doesn't deserve to be around, or the city isn't a good baseball city. Obviously that's not the case. Going to the games right now, they sold out the weekend. They're getting 30,000-35,000 for the Twins on a weeknight. These are good numbers, and the fans support this team really well. And yeah, you know, John Gregg, Sportsnet magazine correspondent, came. He's been in Boston the last little bit, and he was talking about ESPN doing a Kevin Pillar love-in the other night, just showing all of Kevin Pillar's stats. We mentioned him before in the great catches and the great things he's been doing, but he's not a superstar by any means.
Right.
So the fact that you can get some love for a guy who's doing it in a really, you know, amazing way, but, you know, not a big name, I think it shows the reach that this team has. And that's cool. I can get behind that. I prefer that people were saying, like you said, great success or terrible play. Yeah, you know, having the Toronto team attached to great successes.
If you think they're talking about the Blue Jays a lot in Boston now, wait till if the Jays have a good series in New York, then they'll really love the Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I know, and doesn't it feel strange, like, with the Yankees taking on the Red Sox this week, that we were rooting for the Red Sox?
Yeah, it's odd, a little bit.
And I feel kind of, well, I say we. I wouldn't put myself in that category necessarily because I'm kind of a Yankees fan. But...
No.
But I have to say, though, I'm conflicted because the Blue Jays, you know, it's not as if I'm a Blue Jay hater or anything like that. I'm loving what I'm seeing out of the Toronto Blue Jays. And frankly, I'm a Yankees fan of, like, Posada, you know, Derek Jeter, Bernie Williams, those guys. I'm finding it tough to really, like, enjoy this Yankees team. Like, there isn't a number of players or even one player that I really gravitate to. You know, so it's a bit of a, like, yeah, Yankees fan, but, you know, I'm not in love with Mark Teixeira. Certainly not in love with Alex Rodriguez. So these are guys that I find it kind of tough to root for. We haven't mentioned Drew Hutchison. And I know you guys want to omit him from the conversation entirely. All right, but we're not
just the rotation, not the conversation.
All right, Hutchison. He hasn't been as good as he is. He's better than this. All right, but when you talk about David Price and what you want to do from here on out with the rotation, and this is something that that John Gibbons and pitching coach Pete Walker are working on, that, you know, while in New York, that they want to figure out the rest of the rotation, the rest of the time out. But with Hutchison, you know, with Price, we could talk about the entire rotation and what you do from here. But what do you do with Drew Hutchison? Like, do you feel that you want to miss some of his starts? Do you go, you know, with regular starts, don't miss anybody, with all the days off that are coming to them later on in the year, later on in the month? What do you do with Drew Hutchison?
I think with 3 days off at the end of this month, I think it's in the span of like 8 or 9 days, I think you kind of have to skip a start for Drew Hutchison. Like, you know, at one point it looked like he was okay at home and like good on home and kind of bad on the road, but they're going on this extended road trip at the end of August and have 3 days off. I think Hutchinson's one of those guys you need to sit, especially considering his track record on the road this season.
Mm. What would you do,
Craig? I kind of agree with Gary, but I feel like I also have this, you know, shaky faith in Drew Hutchinson sort of returning to some sort of form. Like, we've seen him have good games this season. You know, he had a complete game earlier on. And I feel like I was listening to Gibby talk after the game, and people were asking, you know, is it about time you're considering demoting Drew Hutchinson? Is this a situation that's untenable? And he said it's way too early for talk like that. He also said that it might be partly sort of a mindset thing where he needs to start thinking less like a power pitcher and more like a guy who needs to pick his spots and just sort of hit zones. And I could see that really working. And I mean, not like this is a great time in the season to be changing your pitching philosophy, but with the kind of run support he has and the kind of run support he's gotten, I feel like, you know, now might be a great opportunity to just sort of try a couple of things out, see how it works, you know, get your work in, try a couple of things, and maybe it winds up working out for you. There isn't a great option as far as I see for just sort of immediately replacing him unless Alex Anthopoulos can work one of those, you know, strange August miracle tricks.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, leave it to Alex Anthopoulos to pull something off of that magnitude. I look at Hutchinson and I really think he's better than this. I think he'll break. I'm still holding out faith that he breaks out of it, but I think you take it from, you know, start to start. And you guys are right. Like, there isn't, it's not as if there's anybody with the Bisons who are saying, well, that guy should be starting. It's that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might look at a spot start here and there and go, all right, well, I think I trust, I don't know, just throwing out a name, Scott Copeland for five innings than I would out of Drew Hutchinson, because if you know that you can bring in, if you're banking on the bullpen having to pick up four innings of that start, I'd rather roll the dice on a Scott Copeland for five as opposed to who knows what you're going to get out of Drew Hutchinson. I'm not there, but maybe that's a look. And again, I'm just throwing out a Scott Copeland, not as if that's the guy I would initially pluck out of Buffalo, but just a name that I come up with the top of my head. Randy Wolf, maybe another. We'll see. We'll see what happens the rest of the way out for the Blue Jays rotation. As far as David Price goes, are you pitching him till his arm falls off every 5 days, every five games? I think a lot of it has to do with what you do with Drew Hutchinson there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with David Price?
I mean, that's a very good question. That's probably going to be the biggest, toughest decision that John Gibbs and Alex Anthopoulos have to make the remainder of the season is, do you pitch him every five games or do you pitch him every 5 days? I mean, if we went on that schedule now, you know, if he's pitching every 5 days, then he's pitching against the Oakland A's on Thursday afternoon. But if you pitch him every five games, he's pitching against the Yankees on Friday when they come to town next weekend. So it's one of those questions where, do you want to pick your spots and make sure that he's up against games you must win? Or are you going to try to squeeze out as many innings as you can from him? I think I'd love to see the Jays pitch him on every five games until next week when they can match him up against the Yankees. And then after that, move him to a 5 day schedule. Because with a couple of days off in, like as I mentioned, at the end of August, then you're getting an extra start from David Price. And that's a big deal. You want your ace on the mound as much as you can have him.
I know the At the Letters podcast guys, Arden and Ben Nicholson Smith, Arden Zwelling and Ben, were on the podcast this week talking about how they just feel like they need to get as many possible innings out of him as possible in the 2 months that you have. So, I think like you said, sort of like a balanced idea, you know, you need him for that Yankees game, but then 5 days after that, you only got the guy for maybe 11 or 12 starts tops after this, including today. So, yeah, maximizing the amount of time that you've got this guy, especially if he's leaving in the offseason, is just paramount, right? Like, I think you can't go the every five games.
Very quickly, what if he's terrible against the Yankees today? Which, as we talked about earlier on, he's been bad the last couple of times. I wouldn't change a thing. I would throw David Price up against the Yankees every chance I get, even if he's bad today. You guys agree?
Oh, I absolutely. Do. Yeah, no, I feel like over time, you're going to get David Price. You're not going to get, you know, oh no, he had a bad game, David Price. You're going to get the guy we've come to know as an ace.
Yeah, and you're not acquiring David Price so that you could hide him.
No.
Versus the Yankees.
And let's face it, next Friday's at the Rogers Center, and as David Price said himself, that is the greatest atmosphere he's ever pitched in. So that could only help.
Yes, so if it doesn't work out today, it certainly could the next time out, but it'll probably work out today. And we'll have the game for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network starting at 12:30. You could watch it on Sportsnet as well. And as we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, while we talk about the Blue Jays' present, we'll talk a bit more about their future, notably in the front office. We'll talk about that in this hour on the Sportsnet Magazine Live with Craig Battle and Gary Mello. I'm Jeff Sambit, the Sportsnet Radio Network.
From two guys with a better stance than Tony Batista, It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
It's not every day a club acquires the Troy Hawkins.
Yeah, right. Yeah, LaTroy Hawkins, what everyone's talking about in Toronto today.
He's like 42 years old.
Oldest guy.
He was in the majors before Roberto Osuna was born.
Jordana Ventura, obviously, has been in the center of some of these high emotion events.
Nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
He's been an ass a few times, is what he's been.
Debate, discussion, and interviews on the latest Blue Jays news, MLB rumors, and top prospects. At the Letters, every week with Ben Nicholson Smith and Arden Zwelling on Sportsnet.ca or subscribe to the podcast.
Shai Davidi.
Alex Speer, Tim Durkas, the owner and the founder of MLB Trade Rumors.
Ben Badler, the national writer for Baseball America.
At the Letters, every week with Ben Nicholson Smith and Arden Zwelling on Sportsnet.ca or subscribe to the podcast.
Here in Toronto. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live with Craig Battle, the senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, Gary Mello, managing editor, Sportsnet Digital and Magazine. I'm Jeff Sambit, host. Pales in comparison to what these guys do and what their business cards look like. Anyway, I'm fine with that. Craig and Gary, we're going to look around Major League Baseball next hour. With some playoff races that are going on, and I got to talk about Mike Trout a little bit because, wow, this guy at 24 years old, I mean, it's incredible. We'll talk about him next hour. But we talked about the Blue Jays in the present and all the hype that surrounds the team right now, and understandably so. But what about the Blue Jays' future? And this week we saw Dave Dombrowski out in Detroit, which was a shock to everybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw that coming, especially after he pulled off the David Price deal. And then rumors abound, and look, it. I don't know if they're necessarily rumors, but certainly the thought, because I had it when I heard Dombrowski was out, was, well, what about here in Toronto with Paul Beeston, the outgoing president? Eventually, he's not going to be the president. And, you know, what about Dombrowski being the president? Everybody talked to about Dave Dombrowski is like, you can get him, you get him. Like, whatever role, you go out and get him. So there is obviously that possibility of Dave Dombrowski coming to Toronto. Then obviously you start to wonder what happens with GM Alex Anthopoulos, with any incoming president, but with Dave Dombrowski, if we're going to pick that name, coming in to be president, with the way Alex Anthopoulos talked about Dombrowski after the Price deal, and given that they've gotten together on a couple of deals. I mean, Anthopoulos was raving about Dombrowski. Dombrowski came in as Blue Jays GM. I wouldn't worry about the future of Alex Anthopoulos. I'm not sure you would anyway with the deals he's made at the trade deadline, but
no.
You know, beyond that, I wouldn't worry about Alex Anthopoulos. Gary Mello, what do you think?
Well, it's a very interesting situation for the franchise for sure, because, I mean, Alex Anthopoulos, do you lock him up now after the season he's had and making the additions to this team? Like, he's been spectacular. Like, you don't want him to get away. But can you extend him without a president in place? And then the question with Dombrowski is he ready to come in and kind of be more of the business side of things and let Alex Anthopoulos handle the baseball side? They clearly got a lot of respect for each other. You know, Arden Zwelling wrote that great TikTok piece of the 48 hours that transformed the Blue Jays this week. If you haven't read it yet, I recommend you logging on and doing so. You can tell that there's a lot of respect between the two GMs, or I should say former GM Dombrowski. So they obviously like each other. They have a history. They have a good rapport. And, you know, Anthopoulos was raving about how good Dombrowski was during those discussions to the point where when they stopped talking about Price, Alex told him, if he's, you know, if Price is back on the market, please give me a call. Mm-hmm. And Dombrowski did just that. He could have easily taken the best offer from any other team. But when he knew he was ready to move Price, he got back on the phone with Alex and worked out the deal.
Yeah, which shows there's a lot of trust there between those two guys, right? Because normally you would just assume that it's Alex Anthopoulos' job to be the hassle. You know, like, okay, I'm going to call you every 15 minutes because I'm interested in this. And I know that there's the potential that if I don't, that this guy's going to slip out from under us and I'm going to miss the opportunity. So that's a leap of faith that you're taking as a GM to just take a guy at his word and say, yeah, you call me. Don't worry about it. If you know, when you want to talk, give me a shout.
Well, it is, but I mean, Dombrowski, it's still within his best interest at the time as you know, GM of the Tigers to kick all tires of every interested party to see if he could get a better deal elsewhere. So it, you know, Dombrowski would be doing his due diligence to still call Alex Anthopoulos and say, all right, I got a deal with so-and-so. Can you improve that? If that
you know, ended up being the case or something. So now with Dombrowski and what he wants, as far as the job title here in Toronto, would that be something he wants? And also, would this be the type of team that he wants? And I know you look at, let's say the Blue Jays make the playoffs, but they don't win the World Series. What an attractive situation. Even right now, it's an attractive situation to come in and get to run this team with this much talent, even with some of the questions that might come up this offseason. But would this be an organization that Dombrowski would want to want, having been able to, in the past, rebuild teams from the ground up? I wonder, Craig, if this is the situation that Dombrowski would want.
It's interesting because, yeah, in Detroit, he was the CEO, the president, and the GM. He was involved in, you'd imagine, just about every decision that gets made, you know, from, you know, popcorn sales to big trades like David Price. So here, with a GM in place, unless the plan was to bring Dombrowski in as president, GM, and push out Alex Anthopoulos, which seems to me like a completely insane thing to do, he would be taking less of a job, which it seems to me, I'm not sure. He's 59 years old. He's got a ton of years left in baseball. Is that something he's looking forward to doing? Like, okay, I'd like to be just more involved in the business side and sort of like organizational sort of strategy. You know, what type of player are we going to get? What are we looking for? Are we looking for this offseason? Okay, go ahead and you do that and I'll do my job. That would be taking not necessarily, it's not a demotion, it is less of a role. So he's got options elsewhere. You said a situation where he's rebuilding a team. Boston's looking for a president this offseason likely. So that's a situation where you're going to need to do some house cleaning and you're going to need to revamp some stuff because this season has not gone Boston's way. So I don't know. I could see that being a perfect fit here if he wants that role. But I don't know that he wants that role.
Well, it's one of those things where not only does Alex have a lot of respect, but their history goes way back to even back when Alex was with the Expos as a young man trying to work his way in baseball. But you're right about, you know, you made a good point, Jeff, about wanting that challenge. You look at Theo Epstein going, you know, Chicago Cubs and kind of helping build mm-hmm. that back up. You look in other sports even, you know, Mike Babcock is the coach of the Maple Leafs, not because they're on the, you know, the verge of winning, but that he has an opportunity to build this, you know, this team back up. So, you know, that's a question that Dombrowski needs to answer.
Yeah, well, and with Babcock too, he got paid. I mean, that
helps.
That does help as well.
Yep.
He's certainly getting paid for his job. As we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, we'll kick off the 11 o'clock hour, looking around Major League Baseball at some of the playoff races and just how good is Mike Trout at 24, where we're going to tell you. And the numbers are going to blow your mind, honestly. With Craig Battle and Gary Mello, I'm Jeff Sambat, the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sammet with this week Craig Battle, the senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, and Gary Mello, managing editor, Sportsnet Digital and Magazine. And guys, ahead this hour, talk about the Raptors unveiling their new jerseys and the Drake influence, a little bit on the Rogers Cup, but mostly on Eugenie Bouchard and the coaching switch that she has made. She's got a temporary one right now, but it's problems extend beyond that. English Premier League starting today, and we're going to talk about a couple of familiar faces coming back to Toronto as well in the form of Oakland A's. That's coming up a little later on in the hour, but a focus on Major League Baseball. And while we spent the first hour talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, there are other teams that are trying to get into the Major League Baseball playoffs, and three of which include the Chicago Cubs, Houston Astros, and New York Mets. And I'm checking the calendar. It is August 8th. Can you believe we're talking about those three teams in the playoff hunt? Not just in the playoff hunt. And the Astros and Mets are leading their division. Cubs are looking for a wild card spot right now. I mean, it's incredible, Craig, that we're talking about those three teams in the Major League Baseball playoff race.
And I mean, you add Kansas City in there, and obviously they had success last year. But these are franchises that really haven't had their heydays since, you know, like, the 90s, you know, this is sort of, it feels like an anachronism to be talking about all these teams doing this well this late in the season. it seems like, at least, you know, as far as the, you know, the Astros are concerned, that's a legit team. I remember talking to Ben Nicholson-Smith about that team a month back. He wrote a piece for the magazine saying, you know, like, is this team for real? Like, is there a real chance that this is going to happen? And his big thing at the time was the pitching isn't that good. But they went out and made moves at the trade deadline to bolster that staff. So that's a team with some young players, some good hitters, some good pitchers, and they have a chance to hold off the Angels, which is, you know, early in the season seemed like you'd be insane to make that call.
And which is especially impressive considering they got the best player in baseball in Los Angeles right now and, you know, clear-cut favorite for the American League MVP. But what also helps is that, like, these are teams you kind of want to cheer for. I mean, who doesn't want to see the Mets win, you know, other than the Yankees fans sitting across from us right now? But I mean,
I don't know who you're talking about, Gary.
You know, even the Chicago Cubs. Who doesn't want to see the Chicago Cubs in the playoffs? They're kind of like the lovable losers. And, you know, look at the job that Theo Epstein has done there, now with Joe Maddon there. You kind of want to see them do well. And it's good for baseball to see the Chicago Cubs in the conversation for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and, you know, with the Cubs, in talking about young stars, I kind of want to see Chris Bryant in there. Like, wouldn't it be amazing in his first year to be in the playoffs and to see what... You know, how he performs under that kind of pressure. That's fun to watch. I think it's a great point. Also, I look at, you know, Major League Baseball. I don't think it would hurt to have a Chicago team in there, to have a New York mm-hmm. team.
It's a great market
in there. It's, you know, it'd be nice to see, and it would be nice to see, you know, Wrigley Field hosting playoff baseball. Wouldn't that be something?
As long as Bartman is sitting nowhere near the field, I think the people of Chicago would also love to see that.
You but know, okay, so I,
poor
I
knew, guy.
Exactly, like, it's a good joke, but at the same point, like I want to.
The comedy's fine.
The comedy's good, Gary, but like I feel for that guy to such a great degree that I would love to see them be able to host a playoff baseball game and then like have him in a box.
Oh, he'll throw out the opening pitch for sure. Yeah,
dude, right.
Yeah.
Driving out in a bulletproof car.
No. I mean, I want to see that guy get some closure. If you guys watched that 30 for 30 on ESPN.
I did.
And
broke my heart.
Absolutely, it breaks your heart. That guy's one of the biggest Chicago Cubs fans that you can possibly imagine. Just like lives and dies by the team. And then to be involved in that unwittingly and
terrible.
To be like everybody's pariah just ruined that guy, you know? So,
yeah, and there were others that were, you know, that were trying to get the ball.
It happened this week at the Rogers Center.
It happened this week at the Rogers Center.
And, you know, you saw Batista after the play kind of look over and give that look of disgust and shake his head. I'm like, when will fans learn to kind of stay in their space and let the players do their work?
It's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, like, I want to apologize for Steve Bartman here. Like, you know, you're in the front row, you're in the second row, ball comes, you just kind of, oh, I'm going to put my hand out.
Right.
You know, it's a human error that wound up costing his favorite team's playoff chance.
And to, you know, for Bartman, it's not as if I don't recollect him actually reaching down and taking it out of a loose glove, although it may have fallen there.
Sure.
Kind of felt like it was above him. The ball was above him.
I mean, that's another great reason to get the Cubs back into the playoffs, exactly. To kind of help erase those demons of the past. And,
yes.
You know, nobody wants them to kind of make it back to the playoffs and win World Series more than Bartman, I'm sure. But, you know, like I said, it just makes the Cubs the kind of lovable losers that everyone wants to see win. Yeah. It would be a great story.
Yeah,
and the Cubs had something to do with that meltdown as well.
Oh, of course.
You know, and the fan interference this week with the Jose Bautista stare down right afterwards, which I would hate to be on the receiving end of. Greg Zahn felt the need on Sportsnet afterwards to do a little bit of a tutorial on how to conduct yourself as mm-hmm. a fan when getting those kind of seats on those sight lines and straight up. Just go straight up. If there is an opponent,
yeah.
You know, if the opponent is rushing over for a ball, stay in your own field of play.
Sure.
Go straight up for the ball.
Yeah. Pull a Robert Parrish.
Yeah. Pull, exactly. Robert Parrish. That's what Zonnie was saying. But, you know, if Bautista's trying to hang over and try to get a ball, you stay out of his way. Like, let the home team catch. So I was laughing when Zon did that. Not because I wasn't laughing at Zon. I was like, really? He feels the need to do it. Like, and I don't blame him.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. So hopefully the Cubs and Mets are going to be in the playoffs. Now, with the Mets, see, here's the thing. The Mets, the whole thing with them was, all right, they can pitch, but they can't score runs. Well, they're starting to score runs. I mean, they're not the Blue Jays or the Yankees or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they made some deals. But more than that, they needed some help. They, you know, from within, they needed somebody to step up. They were looking for an offensive answer. And they got it out of Lucas Duda. Like, their manager, Terry Collins, went to Duda and said, hey, you need to start There's got to be a reason for me to pencil you into the lineup anymore, because there's going to be a point where I just can't play anymore.
Yeah.
And he stepped up. He hitting home runs with regularity. And now he leads the club with 21 home runs with 53 RBIs. And they needed more of an offensive presence. And now that the Mets have that and they've got that pitching, this might not just be a team that makes the playoffs, but actually wins a division, as they could do right now. But also be a force to be reckoned with once they're in the playoffs.
And there's certainly no similarities there between the Blue Jays and Mets offense. But, you know, one spot that you can compare the two teams is the fact that they're hot right now as well, the Mets. Like, they're peaking at the right time. Like, they've won 7 straight. They're, like, 8-2 in their last 10. And with the Washington Nationals nipping at your heels, it's a good time of year to get hot.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too, about the Washington Nationals. I mean, a lot of people weren't really thinking about the New York Mets because this wasn't supposed to be a division that was up for grabs, right?
Right.
You come into the season, they come off last season's success and then add Max Scherzer to that starting rotation. You know, there was talk before the season about, is this the best starting rotation that's ever been put together, right? Like, they were so dominant and they looked so great. So you're looking at that and you're thinking, okay, well, everybody's playing for second in mm-hmm. that division. So the fact that, yeah, they are holding them off and that Washington has opened the door for them, that I feel like, yeah, getting hot now and... Because, yeah, like, Washington had a lot, you know, it sort of psychologically, they had a long way to fall. And, you know, seeing that the Mets are above you at this time of the season, I feel like, you know, maybe there's going to be some sort of frustration on the part of that Nationals team that you don't want to be dealing with at this point in the season.
I was at a Mets game a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, and it was with my brother. And we were talking about how the Mets are, you know, doing well and everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to my brother, and he agreed, you know, just saying, well, it's all well and good that the Mets are doing this right now. But it's just a matter of time before the Nationals figure themselves out and run away with the division. It still hasn't happened. Mm-mm. And it's August 8th right now. And they're the team that went out and got Jonathan Papelbon.
Yep.
You know, they're the team, they're a team that was very aggressive and paid quite a price for Jonathan Papelbon. And here they are 2.5 games out on New York Mets. And it's, you know, they're 4-6 in their last 10. And I was talked to a couple of people about the Washington Nationals this past week. And everybody says about them that, you know, we talk about the Blue Jays right now, everything's working.
Sure.
And with Washington Nationals, there might be one part of their game that's going well, but there's a couple other parts of their game that's dissolving any of the good they're doing. They just can't get on a roll. So that National League East, it just might very well end up with the Mets in first and the Washington Nationals in second, and might consistently stay that way for the rest of the timeout.
And it's not like Washington hasn't gotten performances. I mean, Bryce Harper is the favorite for the NL MVP. Right now he leads the entire league in WAR. He's got 7.4 according to Baseball Reference, which even outstrips the guy that we want to talk about in a bit, Mike Trout, who has 6.9. He's just been knocking the cover off the ball. He's 22 years old. We're looking at a guy who's peaking at the right time. You would assume that this is sort of a galvanizing force behind that starting rotation that would propel them. So yeah, like you said, statistically, this looks like a team that should be winning more games mm-hmm. and should outstrip the Mets down the stretch, kind of in the way that the Jays were. Their run differential was off the charts. You know, everybody was saying that they should be doing better, so that this 14-6 run since the All-Star break kind of feels like correction, right? Like, it feels like they were due. so the Nationals could be in that situation as well.
And you talk about wanting to see young players on the biggest stage, the young greatest players. You know, Bryce Harper, here's another guy who, you know, as you mentioned, and you know, someone who's in the MVP discussion, mm-hmm. 22 years old. Like, how, that's incredible. Like, we're talking about two MVP candidates, one who's 22 in the National League and one who's 24, just recently turned 24 in the American League. Yes. Like, how great for baseball is that?
That's fantastic.
And I've kind of felt that with Bryce Harper, that he's been around for a little while. Like, I don't feel like he's the new kid on the block anymore. I feel like he's just one of the stars in Major League Baseball. Not as if he's been around forever, but I get the feeling he's been around for some time, and I have to remind myself, yeah, only 22 years old. It's incredible. We're going to talk about Mike Trout in a moment. And the Washington Nationals, they've got an interesting situation at shortstop with Ian Desmond, because guys, he's not hitting at all. And he's you know, a fan favorite there. Like, they you know, he's been around for a very long time, but he's hitting .218. You know, and they're loyal to him. He's been loyal to them, and they might have to make a decision there and say, are we going to go with someone else at shortstop? They've got a young kid that's trying to burst through. Do you put in a young kid in a playoff race at this point? So interesting times for the Washington Nationals, and especially with that shortstop position. So we're going to see what happens out of that. So let's talk about Mike Trout, and we do so here on Sportsnet Magazine Live. This is Craig Battle and Gary Mello. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Mike Trout is just a bit older than Bryce Harper. He's only 24. Hit a home run yesterday on his 24th birthday. That's the third time he's done that. It's becoming a tradition where Mike Trout celebrates a birthday while Gary, he's going to do it with a home run.
I mean, spectacular player. Yeah. And you look at some of the numbers that he's put together by the age of 24, and he's in some incredible company. Like, when I think of the greatest hitter in baseball, I think of Pete Rose. And at this age, he's got double the amount of hits that Pete Rose has. Like, that's incredible. Like, those are numbers that you don't – he's a generational player.
Well, let me give you some of these numbers. In Trout, comparing with Barry Bonds and Pete Rose. And this – I'm not kidding. It blew me away. I couldn't believe these numbers. It's blowing me away. Now here are the numbers. Trout, and this is all at the age of 24, where these players were at or are at, or is at with Trout at the age of 24. So Trout, home runs, 130. Bonds, 59. Rose, 10. Trout, hits. Trout with 689. Bonds, 338. Rose, 311. How about walks? Even walks. Trout has 320. Bonds, 161. Rose, 91. I mean, he's blowing them away at the age of 24. It's incredible what Trout is doing. He's got more than twice the number of home runs at this age than Barry Bonds did. And I know Barry Bonds later in his career, in some way, in part, hit a ton of home runs. And then with Pete Rose, you know, he's got more than double the number of hits that Pete Rose does, and Pete Rose being, of course, the all-time hits leader. It's incredible what Mike Trout has done up to this point in comparison with those two great players in Barry Bonds and Pete Rose.
And that's just amazing to watch. I think we can take it for granted, you know, what Trout's done, just because there were those couple of years where people were, the conversation was Miguel Cabrera and Mike Trout, and, you know, it wound up being sort of a new stats versus old stats kind of argument. And I think people got tired of that. And they, okay, great. Mike Trout's really good. Okay, we get it. You know, let's move on. Like, you've beaten us to death with this argument. So even though he is 24 years old, I think we're getting into that sort of, like, supreme athlete fatigue. You know, like, you can talk about him enough. But, you know, I think, you know, if we just sort of get caught in that trap, we're going to miss this player and just exactly what he is and exactly, you know, what he can do. Because, yeah, the numbers are obviously off the chart. And, you know, he's a guy that we're going to be watching for years and years and getting to enjoy. That's one of the great things about baseball, is a guy who hits it like this and sort of, you know, changes the expectation around certain players and stuff like that. I think that's incredible.
No, and like you mentioned, the names that you're putting him in a company with, I mean, that's pretty spectacular. Not only is he in that company, but he's surpassing those guys.
Oh.
And, you know, like, he's in the conversation with Hank Aaron and, you know, Ken Griffey Jr., and the list goes on and on, like Mel Ott. So it's pretty spectacular. And I'm quite not at the fatigue point just yet, even though he's only, you know, he's 24, but it seems like he's a veteran already. He's been around for a while. But as you mentioned, this is a great player, and we're getting the opportunity to watch him live, and it's something special you need to take in.
Well, and that said, are we capable in this day and age with social media, but beyond that, all the distractions that we have? You know, we're always staring down at our phones. You know, you look down at, you know, I go to ball games, and there's a lot of people looking down their phones and looking up numbers, looking up stats. I'm like, the ball game is happening right in front of you. Can you just enjoy the athletes that you're seeing on the field right now?
Or you're watching the game through your phone.
Or you're watching the game through your phone. Absolutely. But, you know, there's a lot of distractions, there's a lot of choice as well. You know, I mean, we're lucky enough. I could watch every single one of Mike Trout's games if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And if given the opportunity, I would. But you can. You can watch it. You can watch any game online or with the extra innings package on Rogers. You can do anything you want. You can watch any game you want. There's a lot of distraction, a lot of things that you can be doing. Are we capable in this day and age of seeing an athlete like this doing what he's doing and appreciating him or her?
I think so. I mean, you're seeing it in other sports. Like, I don't think LeBron James is undervalued. You know what I mean? And there's another example of a generational player. Same thing if you talk about the NHL and Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin. These are all players that I think are not undervalued because you realize it. And not to mention, because of social media and how much access we have to all the games, you can see these players all the time. So I don't think that it will be an issue with Mike Trout.
But one thing I think LeBron has going for him, just in terms of that, in terms of, like, you know, the highly talkable nature, is that there's debate surrounding him. You know, there's sort of, you know, does he pass too much? Does he defer too much? What position is he best at? Is he a point guard? Is he a ball hog? All that sort of stuff. Whereas Trout's just great. You know, like Trout does nothing wrong. You know, like there was sort of that, you know, is he that great a defender last couple of seasons? Is that dragging down his war? But it's like, nope, Trout's a good guy.
He does that well too.
Yeah, he plays defense well. You know, he's a good player, good person. You know, like Ben Nicholson Smith did that cool story for the magazine earlier this year about how like what he's really into is meteorology. You know, like he's a you know,
loves the weather.
Loves the weather. He follows meteorologists on Twitter. He engages with them, stuff like that. He's a good guy with interesting hobbies and stuff like that. He's not a lightning rod for criticism, and it's just sort of
pun intended, Craig.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, I like that. That was subtle. Hey, well done.
No, it wasn't intended, but
you should have claimed it.
I'll take it.
Well, what if? Let me ask you this: total what if? Okay, mm-hmm. He's playing with the Angels. He's out in the West Coast. Maybe we don't hear as much access as we have.
No, that's very true.
You know, he's not on the East Coast, so we get to see him in our time zone, whatever. You know, maybe he's, you know, his game's just on too late for a lot of people. But if he were a Yankee, given what he's done right now at the age of 24, would you hate him? Would you be sick of him?
A little bit more, I think so, for sure.
A little bit more.
Yeah, but I think
it would closer come to with that.
I think so. I think at that point, then you're getting into fatigue territory because you put a player like that in New York and then the media coverage is overblown 100%.
Mm-hmm. And I think, that there's a certain, I mean, from a you know, another fan base's point of view, there's a certain villainy that comes with a Boston Red Sox or a New York Yankees uniform, just the amount of success they've had. So you kind of put that on him, you know, like a, you know, in basketball, a guy puts on a Boston Celtics jersey and they push in. It's like, oh, that guy's a jerk. You know, he puts on the Raptors jersey. And if Raptors are your team, he's like, yeah, that guy's scrappy, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that sort of works, you know, if you are a Yankee and you're doing it, you become the, oh, he's got so much privilege and they've got so much money and, oh, geez, you know, there's certain things that come around. So I think,
it's the pinstripes for sure.
It's the pinstripes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, people would dislike Mike Trout more. If he was in a Yankees, or there would be a larger faction of people who disliked Mike Trout.
And he might be more polarizing.
Yeah, he'd be more polarizing, and maybe people would start picking apart his game enough that you could, you know, reinvigorate that side of the debate. That's like, no, you know, leave him alone. He's playing great. You're you know, looking at, you're picking nits here, that sort of thing.
Oddly enough, I'd like Mike Trout more if he was in pinstripes.
That's probably true.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
We've talked about the Yankees. We've talked about the Cubs, and part of, you know, and we've also talked about game selection and, you know, what games you get to watch. It's a game that involves a Mike Trout. But have you ever done this where you've got your choice of games that you want to watch and you've got time to watch a ball game and you start to pick, you know, what I do is who's pitching, you know, who's on the club. If it's Mike Trout, you know, I'm in. But I also do this at stadium. What stadium, if they're playing in such and such a part, like, if Tampa is at home, not watching it. I mean, I know maybe this time of year, you're not going to watch it anyway.
Neither are the people in Tampa.
But if it's in Tampa, I'm like, nope, I don't want to spend 3 hours in that park. You know, I'm not doing that. But if it's even right now in August, if the Cubs were not in a playoff race, and obviously they are, but even not, I would still pick a game. I would still pick a Cubs game to watch at home because it's in Wrigley. Do you guys do that? Like a choice of park, like, are you guys park aficionados? Like, do you think about, oh, I got to visit that park, I got to go to that park, or I've been to that one?
Oh, 100%. And I mean, like, Wrigley Field's very high on my bucket list of parks to go to. I've been outside Wrigley Field during the game, but didn't have the opportunity to go. And that's part of the reason why I would love to see the Cubs back in the playoff race or even in the postseason, because just the atmosphere at that ballpark and watching it in that ballpark, I think, would be spectacular as a baseball fan.
Why didn't they let you in? What was wrong?
I was wearing a White Sox t-shirt. Oh. No, that's not true. No, I was on my way to a concert in Chicago at the exact same time, and I contemplated catching two innings and going to the concert, but I decided against it.
Yeah. So, what do you think of that decision now? Would you have taken those two innings?
I'm still going to get back to Wrigley. I think I'm going to make, when the Blue Jays return, I'll probably make that my first trip to Wrigley.
I was going
to
go
Me and everyone else in Toronto, I'm sure.
I was going to go this year. Like, I was thinking about it, like, back in February and March. I'm thinking, okay, my baseball trip this year, I think I'm going to go to Chicago. I want to see Wrigley Field because I haven't been. And then the first game of the year happened with the Cards and the Cubs. And I went, oh, yeah, it's under renovation. Like, I forgot, right? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to go this year if it's under renovation. Then I heard about, you know, after the first game, it was like, they didn't have enough bathrooms. I'm like, well, there's no way I'm going to Wrigley Field because I need to go to the bathroom. That's something I need to do, and I enjoy doing. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to Wrigley Field. So I'm not going this year. So I ended up going to New York, and I went to Yankee Stadium, which I've been a couple times. I've been to the old one, and I've been to the new one a couple of times.
But I went to Citi Field, and I got to say, I liked Citi Field better. I enjoyed it better. The food was better. The concourse was better.
Fans.
Accessibility. Maybe the fans. I don't know. I mean, I felt right at home at Yankee Stadium, oddly enough. But I really enjoyed Citi Field. Now, Craig, did you go to Wrigley? Have you been to Yankee Stadium?
I haven't been in the Wrigley, but I went to the old Yankee Stadium, and I saw it right before they demolished it. And I found that one of the things working for it, so obviously it wasn't a pretty building at that point, but the fan involvement and the amount of, you know, like I'm sitting, you know, deep right field. I'm, you know, a million miles away, and guys behind me are talking to the batters as though that they can hear them. It's like, you know, like given tips and stuff like that. And there was a lot of discussion, like two players on the field, even though there was something that was intimate about it that I liked. And I didn't get caught up in the majesty of old Yankee Stadium or anything like that, but I liked the fan involvement. So that was one thing that really works for me at a building sort of that old and that storied, and with a fan base, you know, as fanatical as the Yankees fan base.
And that's what really captures it for you when you go to these old ballparks. You know, the facilities are not going to be the same. You're not going to have as many toilet stalls in the bathroom. Sorry, Jeff, when you go. But there's something about the history of just being there and just knowing what happened. You know, I was lucky enough to go catch a Blue Jays series a couple of years ago. It was a 2-game series in Boston at Fenway. It was a Tuesday night game and a Wednesday afternoon game. And on Wednesday, I lucked out with some friends and got some tickets off a scalper on the Green Monster. And I was sitting there and just taking it in. And, you know, it's not the greatest seat. You're not right behind home plate or anything like that. But there's just something about the history of the Green Monster and watching the game from that level that it's very mystifying. And I asked myself, I was like, is there any other ticket in sport that is as cool as this, like sitting on the Green Monster? Is there another iconic seat? And it's really tough to pinpoint.
Okay, so a choice. You get to sit up on the Green Monster or right behind home plate at the Rogers Center. What would you take?
That's tough. I mean, behind home plate at the Rogers Center is a great seat. And I got lucky one time when I sat back there years ago. I got tickets last minute behind home plate, and Carlos Delgado just happened to hit 4 home runs. So,
The Tampa one?
The Tampa game, midweek game. Yeah.
I had tickets to that game, and I gave them up.
Oh, yeah, it was a big
I gave them up because it was middle of the week, and I was working on the morning show at the time, and I was like, I don't want to be tired the next morning. It's Tampa.
I probably got your tickets then because I got them last minute. So
probably got my tickets.
I appreciate that. I'm glad you had to work that day.
So
that's fantastic.
Got to experience the experience I wanted.
So I'm a little biased in that sense where, because my one experience back there is, you know, my first experience back there, I just recently sat there again, but it was so spectacular that it is different watching the game from that perspective, the sound of the bat, and just appreciating these athletes as, you know, just how superb athletes
are. Okay, so you would take behind home plate then over sitting up on the Monster. You would take the one.
I mean, if we're comparing those two games, then clearly watching history is, you know, I'll take the Delgado game. But, you know, it is pretty spectacular being able to take in these older ballparks. And that's why I think Wrigley would be so fantastic.
But, I mean, you know, nobody's, I think Rogers Center isn't many people's favorite stadium in terms of history or sort of like, you know, interesting architectural elements or anything like that. But I was in the building Thursday night to watch Mark Burley pitch, and just started, there were 35,000 people in there in a 45,000 seat building on a Thursday night, and there was the buzz made it a much different experience than I'm used to going to Jays games. I hadn't been to one since Alex Anthopoulos' trade deadline moves, and sort of the pre, you know, 20,000-25,000 people on a weeknight to the 35,000, you know, incredibly interested, excited, confident fans does create a much different atmosphere in a building, right? And I think you can't say enough about that. So yeah. Going to Wrigley 10 years ago when they're, you know, losing 100 games, I imagine it'd be fun, but you're not getting the experience. Like, you want to be in Wrigley now, and like you were saying, sort of seeing a game, if they could, you know, they're not in the wild card home game spot right now, but if they could win that game and they could, you know, get a couple of home games, I think that would be an incredible atmosphere to see a game in.
Well, speaking of having history and seeing history at the same time, like going to a historical ballpark and getting to see history, our producer Mark Boffa was in Chicago for the Cole Hamels no-hitter in his final start with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was there for that. And I asked him off-air, obviously, I said, were Cubs fans rooting for Hamels? You know, and he said, up until the last out. Like, up until the last out, they were against him. And then for the last out, like, well, screw it. We're down 5-0 or whatever it was. Let's just lose the ball game, but get to see a no-hitter at that. And
at some point, you just need to recognize greatness. And I think most sports fans would concede at that point.
I've never been. I've never been for a no-hitter. I've never been to a no-hitter.
No.
Ever. You know, and Paul White of USA Today, he's been in the business for 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it's been. And that was the last time I talked to Paul White because he's retiring. This is his last year. And he said that the one thing he's never done was actually witness a no-hitter. Can you imagine with all the games he's been to, he's never been to a no-hitter? If he hasn't been to a no-hitter, what chance do I have to be in a no-hitter? It's never going to happen. come on. I haven't been to a Blue Jays game yet as well, like down at the park since all those deals. Because I was on vacation for some time, and now they're out of town, and I've been working this week. You know, being on the air after a game, can't exactly mean two places at once.
No. A little tough.
Have to be here. So
yep. It's got a different feel.
But it does have a different feel because the last time I can recall, aside from a home opener, is different. It's got a different buzz because, like, they're back. Like, that's different. But I remember when, I don't think it was a home opener. When A.J. Burnett came back and Roy Halladay was pitching against A.J. Burnett. And Burnett was coming back with the Yankees. And, man, that building was crazy. It was so much fun. This city can bring it. It really can. Like, if it's a Raptors game, it's a Leafs game. I've been to many Raptor playoff games. In fact, they've been all Raptor playoff games, if I can recall. And and some Blue Jay games as well, where there's been a lot on the line. And the city can bring it. They can be really loud. When they want to be. So it's great to see that the Blue Jays have given them a lot to cheer about and to be excited about. As we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, I know we're expecting the Yankees, but we're also expecting the Oakland A's. There's going to be a couple of familiar faces, one more of note than the other, that we'll see come back. And we're going to talk about the reception that they/he is going to get. Rogers Cup underway. I'm going to talk about Eugenie Bouchard because she switched coaches. I mean, Is there anything more to that? Does she need more help than that? The Raptors unveiling their jerseys. The English Premier League starting today. We got a lot to get to as we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live with Craig Battle and Gary Mello. I'm Jeff Sambit on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Arden Zwelling.
Alex Anthopoulos certainly has a flair for the dramatic. 5.5 years after becoming the Blue Jays' general manager and diligently building one of baseball's best farm systems, Anthopoulos went all in at the 2015 trade deadline, mortgaging much of that promising future for a chance to win today. He completely revamped his franchise, dealing 11 pitching prospects and shortstop Jose Reyes to acquire 5 major leaguers, including perennial all-stars Troy Tulowitzki and David Price, two of the best players in all of baseball.
The one thing about the trade deadline, it's hard to make trades. Things come up. Things change fast. You know, one trade gets made, there's a domino effect. You just got to stay with it. And you know, at the same time, there's a few players that got traded. We thought we had deals done or we thought we were going to get them and we didn't. And that ultimately led to some of these other deals. So it's crazy how the chain of events can have an impact on things.
Go inside the GM's world and learn all the behind-the-scenes details about the wild 48 hours that shocked the MLB. From the coffee shops, to the all-nighters, to the middle-of-the-night phone call to wake up the president, it was an astonishing week. And you can read exactly how it all went down.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on Next Issue, or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live this week with Craig Battle, the senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Gary Mello, managing editor, Sportsnet Digital and Magazine. I'm your host this week, Jeff Sammet. We're with you until the top of the hour. I'll have Sportsnet today. After that, just a brief addition as we get you set up for the Blue Jays and Yankees. Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet.ca. He's going to join us and we'll preview the Blue Jays and Yankees. And guys, speaking of the Toronto Blue Jays, we're going to see some familiar faces come to town. Danny Valencia, the big Danny Valencia welcome back party, as he's with you. He had a home run last night, first as an Oakland A.
Do we get to see the Danny Valencia gift then when he comes back to Toronto?
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Danny Valencia and Brett Laurie is coming back as a member of the Oakland A's to Toronto. What kind of reception do you think Brett Laurie is going to get?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't think Blue Jays fans have any reason to boo Brett Laurie. I mean, he wore his heart on his sleeve while he was here. He was a great defensively. Unfortunately, injuries kind of, you know, stunted his development a little bit, and he could be at times frustrating at the plate, but there's no reason to boo Brett Laurie. It's not like he wanted out. He did everything he could for this ball club. I fear that with the success that the Blue Jays have seen with Josh Donaldson at third base, that you might get a smattering of fans who boo just because hey, I'm glad you're gone. We got Josh Donaldson out of it. But like I said, I don't think they have any reasons to turn on him.
No, I think he was a bit of a polarizing player here. Just sort of, yeah, like you said, in terms of, you know, injuries and sort of expectations created, that sort of late season surge that he had where he looked like a future superstar. And, you know, I think people were disappointed in him. And but yeah, no, he tried his hardest when he was in Toronto, and he's a, you know, good Canadian guy. And yeah, he's got a polarizing personality as well. But that's no reason to boo a guy. But that said, I'm sure he's going to get boos.
Remember a few weeks ago when the Blue Jays were in Oakland, and that first day he didn't want to talk to the Toronto media, which was I don't get it. And purely from it's not from, oh, he wouldn't talk to us. You know, if he's stiffing me, then I've got a problem. If he's stiffing everybody else, I don't really care. But my problem was with that was, well, from a fan's perspective, I mean, if we're supposed to be a conduit to, you know, to the fans, or, yeah, you know, you'd think that he would want to take advantage of that on day one, and it would expect to do so as well, and give stock answers if he has to, but kind of deal with that right from the get go. I don't understand why he did that. And then the next day he did an exclusive with Barry Davis, and he spoke with other members of the Toronto media, I think, afterwards. I think he did. Mm-hmm. But he spoke with Barry D right off the top there, and perhaps felt the need to kind of get his message out there that, you know, from what he was saying was, no, it wasn't meant to be like a diss or anything like that. I just wanted the focus to be on the series at hand. I didn't want to be a distraction to my teammates. When you should have the foresight that if you don't talk to the media,
makes
then
it
you
more of a
do
story.
Become yeah. a distraction. So just from a perspective of, hey, the fans want to hear from you. And then the other being, this is probably not the best thing for you to do, Brett Laurie, just for your own benefit. I don't understand why he did that. So I really hope there isn't any lingering, you know, feelings or effects after that, you know, with fans saying, you don't want to talk to us. Because the feeling I got day of was a lot of fans were saying, oh, you're only pissed off because you're a member of the media, which was not the case. It was, well, you don't get to hear from them. That's, you know, I was upset for you guys. You know, as a fan, I was upset about it. So I don't think there'll be any lingering effects of that, do you?
I don't think so. I'm actually hoping he has a good game. Like, how great would it be? How jacked up would Brett Laurie be if he hits a grand slam in the Rogers Center? Like,
you're
I
rooting,
hope that happens.
Are you
What's
rooting
going on here?
No, I would just, well, in a losing effort, but, you know, but I just want to see how Brett Laurie reacts.
Okay, like, so it's 9-0 in the eighth inning.
Yes.
All right, and Brett Laurie comes up with the bases loaded. You'll be rooting for
actually,
a grand slam.
I hope it's a 0-0 game, so he actually feels like it means something, and then the Blue Jays offense can come back and erase that deficit. I think that would be more entertaining. But you
thinking.
Remember his, you know, think of some of the shots he hit with the Blue Jays and his reaction getting back in the dugout. Imagine coming back to Toronto and having him do that. That would be spectacular television.
Yeah, he used to tear guys' arms off with those high fives. But yeah, like I feel like in the first scenario, if it's 9-0 and he hits a grand slam and he, you know, goes, you know,
then he's not celebrating.
Dancing around the bases. That's going to look a little strange. As far as sort of not talking to the media, that seems like, yeah, like he gambled one way or the other. You know, like he felt like this is the mature thing to do, and I think it just backfired on him.
Yeah, so absolutely. Danny Valencia is going to be booed lustily. That's going to be a big boo fest right there. I'm just kidding.
I miss Danny Valencia. He was a nice pickup.
Oh, I liked him, yep.
You guys are looking good post-Danny Valencia. You guys are looking okay. Like, you've picked up the pieces and you've come to work. Like, good for you guys.
It was tough, but
good for you guys.
The win streak
has
helped.
the Toronto Raptors unveiling their new jerseys. And, that was my reaction. I wasn't blown away.
With the look or how they unveiled it?
The look.
Yeah.
The look. It just didn't, I was like, I don't understand what the point was, but okay. But I'm always, the way I often am with new jerseys in Toronto, in basketball, whatever, in sports, very often at first I'd be like, whatever. And then when I see them on the field, on the ice, on the court, whatever, I go, oh, those look pretty good, actually. Yeah. Or I start to get used to them. So that could very well happen with me. But, Craig, how did you feel about the Raptors jerseys when you saw them?
I mean, I'm not blown away by them either. The sort of Caps font, sort of, I'm not sure if it's sort of reminiscent of, like, old-school Raptors uniforms. You're going for some sort of old-school dino effect or whatever. Yeah, they don't blow me away. They're definitely bringing in that gold sort of motif, which feels like that's in direct reference to Drake and sort of his sort of look. And I think, you know, I mean, we did a greatest uniforms in sports issue of the magazine a while back. We did the top 30, and we talked to a bunch of jersey designers and stuff like that. And they just basically said, if you're going to do this, you can't really go classic if you don't have some sort of, like, the Yankees can't change anything. They can, they never can. Right. They look classic. They look good. They're drawing on history. But for anybody else who goes with a classic look and doesn't have the Yankees or Red Sox or Chicago Cubs or whatever kind of history, then you're making a mistake. Like, you're going to just do something new. You know, every once in a while, like so they said, safe is the riskiest thing that you can do. So, yeah, like, change up the color scheme. You want to peacock a little bit. You want to be, you know, recognized. So, yeah, like, they're a bit meh for me, but, like, just sort of bringing in, like, changing the color scheme over time, trying something new, I feel like is a necessary thing. So, yeah, that alternate with the gold, I think, is kind of a cool thing. And then the Drake tie-in, obviously, for many reasons, is great.
I think what bothered me most about is I just feel like they need to pick something. I was at game one of the Wizards-Raptors playoff series, and I remember walking to the game, and one thing that stood out to me was I saw people in, like, the old purple stuff. I saw people in the red stuff. I saw people in the black stuff. I just feel like, you know what I mean? I thought this was a good opportunity. Right. The retro stuff always seems to do good, like to do well, excuse me. And so I thought that maybe they were going to lean more towards that way. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of underwhelmed when I saw the actual jerseys themselves. What I appreciated more was how they did it. Like, I thought, you know, Donovan Bennett wrote a great blog on sportsnet.ca this week where it kind of says, you know, it's this type of situation where the partnership with Drake pays off. You know, I remember being on social media Monday night when Drake was performing and everyone was talking about and sharing photos when he came out with the jersey simultaneously as NBA.com and the Raptors were releasing them for sale. So I thought that was kind of a genius ploy to appeal to, you know, to really your audience that's going to go out and buy your stuff.
Yeah, and Drake having a tremendous influence on the Toronto Raptors. They got more out of they thought they were going to get out of this Drake relationship, didn't they?
Right. Oh, and there's probably still more to come. Kevin Durant was at his concert last week. So who knows? This could not be the end of it.
It could be. No, and that could very well be the influence or be part of the influence that Drake has on the Toronto Raptors. Absolutely. Very quickly, and we're not allotting enough time to this, but we'll do our best here. The Rogers Cup hitting Toronto and Montreal. Eugenie Bouchard making the news of late, firing her coach and going with an interim one at the moment. And I recall a conversation that Damian Cox had here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto, and he was saying that whatever is wrong with Eugenie Bouchard, it's beyond mechanics, it's beyond anything, that he feels that there's something not right with Eugenie Bouchard somewhere. Can't put his finger on necessarily, but there's something. It's not an injury, it's not anything. There is something up with Eugenie Bouchard. Do you think this problem that Bouchard's had is falling in the ranks has to do with coaching, or does it extend beyond that, as serious, Gary, as Damian alluded to?
It's interesting because there have been a lot of hints as to where her focus is, and perhaps she's not focusing enough on her play on the court and maybe more on some of the, you know, distractions away from the game. But, you know, firing her coach last week is pretty surprising, especially ahead of, you know, a home tournament. But, you know, she did an exclusive interview with Sportsnet last week in lead up to the Rogers Cup, which will air, you know, in the next couple of days. And this was even before she, you know, she parted with her coach. And she said, you know, the key right now is for me to kind of surround myself with good people. And that's kind of a slow process. So there was already some hints there that maybe there were going to be some changes around her camp. And we saw it just a few days later with her splitting with her coach. So this tournament will be a big one for her. I mean, it's not a grand slam. But it is, you know, there'll be a lot of eyes on her, especially here in Toronto. A lot of the media will be watching closely. She plays her first match on Tuesday. So there'll probably be a lot of pressure on her to see how she performs next week.
And it won't necessarily be an easy, I mean, you know, there's a lot of pressure on her just being at home and the seasons she's had and, you know, a lot of Canadian fans looking for her to do well. But it's not going to be an easy match for her. She's facing an 18-year-old who beat her already this season. So, you know, I think she's entering into a situation where this season is a bit of a write-off. She's gotten 8 wins versus 14 losses. To this point in the season, playing that few matches is kind of insane, but she's got a bit of a rough couple of months coming up for her, I think, just sort of in general in terms of the pressure she's going to face and where she's going to be seated at the U.S. Open, who she's going to play in the first round kind of thing, just based on where she's ranked. I think moving forward, sort of seeing who's around her now and sort of chalking this up, hopefully, to an early career hiccup versus some sort of massive downward trend is important. If she feels like that coach isn't helping her out or is, you know, contributing to the downward spiral by, you know, asking her things that she doesn't feel comfortable doing, then getting rid of it as soon as possible makes sense, right?
Craig Battle, senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. And that's Gary Mello over there, managing editor, Sportsnet Digital and Magazine. Guys, an enjoyable morning. Thanks for spending a couple hours on Sportsnet Magazine Live.
Awesome. Happy to be here.
I appreciate it. As we continue from the morning into the afternoon here in Toronto, we'll get you going with just a quick half-hour edition of Sportsnet today. And I'll have Ben Nicholson-Smith on with me to preview the Blue Jays and Yankees, which we'll have for you at 12:30 on the Sportsnet Radio Network, and you could watch it on Sportsnet. That does it for Sportsnet Magazine Live. Stick around. I got Sportsnet today. I'm Jeff Sammet, the Sportsnet Radio Network.